The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
It's the Gary Knoll Show, and now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to the very in-depth analysis of health and healing, environmental issues, commentary from Dr. Edward Rosnick on protecting your muscles as you age. A little later on, commentaries on what killed Sally Clark's child? And this is from one of the real journalists in the world who looked for the truth and found it, Neville Hodgkinson. And he was a former science editor for the Times of London. It's about vaccines and also the latest on vaccines that you're not yet aware of. Vaccine likely caused child narcolepsy at an astronomical increase. We'll show you about that. The overuse of antibiotics, we're just using too many, a commentary by Ralph Nader. And of course, the latest on healing. Let's begin. One thing that's concerned us, and has certainly concerned me since an interview I did almost 25 years ago with America's leading expert on the dangers of low-level radiation. This was an MD, PhD, and Dr. Goffman, and he said that any x-ray at any time in our lives will end up causing cancer at some point in our lives. So I was asking, well, what about those of us who were baby boomers? And when we were little kids, we'd go into a shoe store and we'd see our parents stepping into this little box that would illuminate their foot so you could see all the bones. Yeah, that'll cause it. What about when we were in the fifth grade and all the students went in and had a fluoroscopic examination where they put this big x-ray screen in front of your chest and you look down and gee whiz, you saw, yeah, that'll do it also. What about a dental x-ray, a chiropractic x-ray? Yeah. What about a mammogram? Yes, also. How does it happen? How can you be x-rayed at one point in your life when you're 5 and end up with cancer from that same x-ray at 30 or 50 or 70? And he went on to explain in great detail the whole concept of oxidative stress and hydroxyl free radicals and what happens in the body. And he also took particular aim at our whole notion that one of the best ways of dealing with cancer was with extensive radiation treatment, where you may shrink or eliminate the cancer in the short term, but then more often than not, the person's immune system is shot from the radiation, and then later the cancer comes back, and we certainly have seen much evidence of that. So I've always been concerned that we've been oversold on x-rays. Not that they can't be helpful, they certainly can when they're needed. But I remember once when I was on a canoeing trip and broke a bunch of my ribs and went in to get it wrapped up, and they wanted to do all these x-rays. And I said, well, how many x-rays? Oh, about 16. I said, no, I'm not going to allow that. Well, we got to know. I said, you may have to know. I know. They wrapped me. And I didn't get any x-rays because those were defensive x-rays, meaning the doctor was going to take the x-rays, not because they couldn't have seen what was going on with one x-ray or two, but because if they were ever sued, they would have had plenty of extra x-rays. A lot of our medicine today is defensive medicine, overdone, which is one of the reasons I believe we should have no-fault medicine. That would cut about $200 billion a year out of our medical expenses and still have a fund set aside for those who are damaged and need compensated or recovered. Here's the latest on this subject. And this is from David Gutritz from Natural News. It says, quote, people in the United States receive more medical radiation than residents of any other country, a fact that is leading increasing numbers of health professionals to call for changes in the way that Many medical tests are performed. One such doctor is radiologist Dr. Stephen Birnbaum, who became concerned about the risks of over-radiation when his daughter received more medical scans after a car accident than he thought necessary. Wondering how widespread the problem was, he directed his staff to call his attention to any patient under 40 who had five or more computed tomography, which is CAT scans, and any patient over 40 who had 10 or more. To his shock, his staff turned up 50 people in the next 3 years, including one young woman who received 31 abdominal scans alone or containing the major excessive scanning. What did this all mean? It means that he saw regular overuse. And now when you look at what happens to the body's immune system, sure enough, it went right back to Dr. Goffman's work. Any x-ray can be dangerous. So it's a heads up when someone starts telling you take regular x-rays, question them. Don't do it. Now, separately, for those of you who have been using guidelines, including nutritional guidelines, to have more berries, and not all berries are the same, but they're all necessary. And that's because each berry has different as well as similar phytonutrients. Now, for example, an apple has about 150 different phytonutrients. Grapes have a little more. But then you get to some superstars like acai, mangosteen, wolfberry, noni, and they have more, but they have really powerful ones. One of those is mangosteen, and I certainly suggest that along with others. Here's the latest on this. This was a study done by the UCLA School of Medicine, Department of Medicine, and published in the Nutrition Journal, peer-reviewed journal called Nutrition Journal. And it says, evaluation of mangosteen juice blend on biomarkers of inflammation and obese subjects to pilot studies. And what they did for 8 weeks, they did a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, and those that received 9 ounces twice a day, that's not a lot, that would be a normal amount, and then they saw what happened to those people. And what they found, the results were rather remarkable. Those that received the actual juice versus a placebo had substantial improvement in turning off the inflammatory cytokines. Those are pro-inflammatory markers. And also less lipid peroxidation, which is good that you turn that down. So two very important things that would help a body with arthritis, fibromyalgia, diabetic, cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, all those conditions are all exacerbated with inflammation. Mangosteen by itself, or in combinations, which what I would recommend, can help turn that down. So that's good. So once again, if you've been using your berries and berry blends, you're on the right side of science. Not to be outdone, a separate study done by a separate institution and published in another peer-reviewed journal shows that strawberry juice that was made into a powder had a way of helping people, women in particular, with metabolic syndrome. And this was done at the Oklahoma Diabetes Center and the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center and published in Nutrition Journal. And they found that it made a big difference. Why? Because the flavonoids, which are powerful anti-inflammatory agents in strawberries. And that can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. And this was in this study, and it was a double-blind study. And once again, those who had the strawberry powder made from the strawberry juice, which is made from strawberries, ended up having the blood flooded with good polyphenolic flavonoids and phytosterols. And that helped them with diabetes, prediabetes, heart disease. So across the board, your fruits, eaten fresh, organic, get them frozen if you can't find them in season fresh, thaw them, juice them, or most powerful of all, the powders made from them, can really help your metabolism, help protect your heart, help protect you against inflammation, and the studies are there to show it. But was this in any newspaper? Was this on the radio? Did you hear anyone with one of the ads for one of the junk foods that cause disease on television, or the drugs that treat your elevated cholesterol. Talk about it? Not a word. And we have thousands upon thousands of these peer-reviewed, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies using health and nutrition as we talk about it, and it's as if it's a great secret. Now, another thing that would be a great secret, except we talk about it, is good bacteria. This is a major study as reported in Science Daily, published by the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and it's about bacteria in your intestine. And here's what it says, and I'll quote it verbatim. A team of scientists from around the globe have found that gut, meaning your intestine bacteria, may influence mammalian brain development and adult behavior. The study is published in the scientific journal from the National Academy of Sciences and is a result of an ongoing collaboration between scientists at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden and the Genome Institute in Singapore. So what this means is this, in lay language. When you eat foods that are rich in probiotics, like Acidophilus or Bifidus, or fermented foods like sauerkraut, which happens to be a very good food for you, or if you take a probiotic with billions, with a B, billions of good bacteria, those good bacteria start to manifest in your intestine, and that's a good thing. Then they displace bad bacteria that can cause disease, and that's even better. Now we know something that goes clear back to a man who helped founded the health movement in the United States, Dr. Kellogg, in Battle Creek, Mission. Now, his brother and he founded the whole health seminar series out there, and then they had a retreat, and if you looked at what they did, like raw food and juicing and exercise, he actually would have people get little electrodes at that time into water enough to stimulate what now we would call a TENS unit, subtle electrostimulation. He believed in having high-fiber diets, a vegetarian diet, eating organic. He wanted to get the toxins out of the body. He was a great promoter of what were called the vitalism phenomena, meaning eat foods, think thoughts, drink water, be in an environment that was vital. So you felt a vitalism. And he was the father of this. And one of the things he suggested was the health of the intestine was the health of the body. If you didn't have a healthy intestine, if you had putrefying, adulterated, dead meat and sugar and flour products and alcohol in your gut, it would affect your behavior. Well, guess what? He was right. This study shows that the health of your gut influences your brain development. So, get rid of the toxins, detoxification, and get in the healthy, vital, raw, living enzymes, phytonutrients, chlorophyll, and you have a better brain. How about that? So they were right all along, but now they're confirming it. Next up, we know that we should be taking the omega-3 fatty acids. For those who are vegan, you can get them with a combination of the omega-3 fatty acids from flaxseed, walnut, avocado, almonds, all of which are good, supplemented with the very important healing antiviral oil, raw organic coconut oil, and I think they should be taken equal amounts. Or you can take fish oil. Now, according to Nature Neuroscience, the peer-reviewed journal, and as published in Science Daily, quote, how maternal essential fatty acid deficiency impacts on its progeny is poorly understood. Dietary insufficiency in omega-3 fatty acids has been implicated in many disorders. Researchers from INSERM and INRA and their collaborators in Spain have studied mice fed a diet low in omega-3 fatty acids. They discovered that reduced levels of the omega-3 had deleterious consequences on synaptic function and emotional behavior. So what does this mean in lay language? It means this. When you take your omega-3 fatty acids at about 1,500 to 2,000 units a day, you will have less likelihood of having depressed behavior. You will be less depressed. Your brain will function better. And that is important. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now, a few things on vaccines. This is new information, and this is from the European Medicines Agency, and here's what it says. Quote, vaccine likely caused child narcolepsy. Children injected with the Pandemrix swine flu vaccine were 900% more likely to contract narcolepsy than those who were not vaccinated. A study by Finland's National Institutes of Health and Welfare. Quote, currently the most likely explanation is that the increase in narcolepsy is by joint effect of the vaccine and some other factors, unquote. So, once again, something that shows why we should not be using the H1N1, showing the adverse effects. But do you have a word about this in the United States? Not a word, but we give it to you. And finally, from Neville Hodgson, a reporter for years, one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best science reporters in the world. Quote, Neville Hodgson asked why the jury in the Sally Clark trial was told to discount the DPT, that's the diphtheria, and tetanus jab given to her second child, Harry, just 5 hours before he was found dead. Sally Clark spent 3.5 years in jail, wrongly convicted of murdering two of her babies after a jury was assured there was no other explanation for their sudden death than that she had deliberately smothered them. Yet 5 hours before her child Harry was found lifeless in his baby chair, he'd been injected with a combined vaccine with a long history of serious adverse reactions. Harry was 8 weeks old, the regulation age for the first of three injections against diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, and HIB, the bacterial infection that can cause meningitis. He was also given an oral polio vaccine. His biological age was 5 weeks, as he had been born 3 weeks premature. Because of the previous sudden death of his brother, Christopher, his breathing was being monitored. He was uncharacteristically dozy from the time of his jabs till the time he died. Not many people know these facts, because at Sally's trial, the defense did not mention immunization as a possible cause of death. Two prosecuting witnesses, including the pediatrician, Professor Sir Roy Meadow, assured the jury it could be discounted. There was no connection between the vaccines and the death. Their statements went unchallenged, and the issue did not form a part of any of the appeal hearings. Professor Meadow, a former member of the Department of Health Subcommittee on Adverse Reactions to Vaccines, told the jury that he could not think of any natural explanation for Harry or Christopher's death. Yet, the DPT vaccine they both received can unquestionably cause alarming and often life-threatening reactions in susceptible babies. The pertussis, the whooping cough component made from whole cells of the microbe, has been especially implicated as a cause of permanent brain damage and death. The evidence was spelled out in an unpublished 150-page report to the Department of Health by Dr. Gordon Stewart, Emeritus Professor of Public Health at the University of Glasgow and a world authority on vaccine safety. Professor Stewart's report, first submitted at the request of the chief scientist in 1983, updated in 1998, and updated in 2006, also shows that unlike the other vaccines, pertussis is ineffective. It doesn't work. There has been widespread reoccurrence of whooping cough in fully vaccinated children in Europe and the United States, and for these reasons, several countries, including West Germany, Italy, and Japan, removed it from their infant vaccination schedule. The report calls for the UK to do the same. Harry Clark died in 1998 when the DPT vaccine also contained controversial preservative thimerosal, mercury. Its use in childhood vaccines has recently been phased out in the UK. Sally Clark, a solicitor, a lawyer, was freed after a huge campaign by friends, family, and other supporters who recognize a gross miscarriage of justice. And by the way, she died just a few months after she was released. Why is this important? Because this story should have been read by Anderson Cooper on and Stephanopoulos and the others in the American media. And shame on NPR and Diane Reams for continuing the attacks against Wakefield before they actually did independent research, because this shows that innocent people have had to go to jail because their vaccines killed their babies. She was freed, and then she died, probably of a broken heart. So the next time any of you assume that the vaccines are safe and effective because you've been told they are. Just remember, the politics of science is pervasive, it is perverse, and it is dangerous. And we're here to challenge it. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
She didn't bat an eye as I packed my bags to leave. I thought she would start to cry. I sit around my room and weep. But you're the girl. She fooled me this time. She acted like I was.
Before we go back to our program, let's just take a break. Our wonderful salespeople here and customer service came up with not one, but two different specials. So you can have your choice, one or the other, or both. And here they are. For this time of year, this is a real superstar. Suprema C, the 24-ounce strawberry powder, Circle K Kosher. Buy one and get one free. Now, I looked carefully to see how many servings is this, and I found out that we have 544 servings. Let me just do the math here. If you were to take one serving a day, that's over, gee whiz, that's over a year and three quarters for one bottle of Supremacy. Now, if you take two a day, you're still just about a year, so you're getting an enormous advantage of how few pennies this cost you per day. What are you getting in the Supremacy? Well, first, this is the buffered vitamin C, highly absorbable ascorbated minerals, and it's got bioflavonoids for enhanced utilization. This is a major antioxidant, and major antioxidants from vitamin C play an important role in our overall health and collagen formation. So you're getting your vitamin C, 625 milligrams per serving, and selenium and bioflavonoids. And it's delicious. So if you want what many consider the finest vitamin C, then it's Suprema C. In fact, I remember walking into a holistic medical doctor's office to talk with him about a protocol, and there on the desk was the Suprema C. And I said, I give it to patients. I said, how do you take it? With that, he opened the lid and chugged some right into his mouth. And he said, that's how I take it. He said, there's nothing like this. Well, there isn't. There's only one Suprema C, vitamin C, and it's on sale. Buy one, get one free. The number to call, it's simple, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or visit our vitamin closet at 307 East 92nd Street, right off 92nd and 2nd. We just completely remodeled the whole place. It's really nice, and Harry's there 6 days a week from noon till 6 o'clock. Or at our corporate headquarters at 83rd and Broadway, 2307 Broadway. Again, you can come anytime from noon till 6 p.m. Now, one other special today. We're going to give you two different specials today. And the second special is one of my favorites. Without fail, I take this every single day, and it's aloe vera. But it's not just any old aloe, because when I looked around at what was in most of the aloes and why they were bitter tasting and why sometimes it caused upset stomach, and then I saw these fancy labels, and I just ask a basic question. Where is the aloe grown? And that led me on a whole journey, clear down to the Dominican Republic, up into the mountains of the Dominican Republic, to these gigantic, almost look like a moonscape, aloe farms, hundreds and thousands of acres. And after spending a day there, I thought, whoa, if Americans only knew that a lot of the aloe they consume comes from this place where they're spraying toxic pesticides. And I took pictures of all this. And they thought I was a buyer of aloe, and that's why they allowed me on. Well, I decided, no, there's got to be a better way to make the best aloe ever. So first and foremost, I made a film. Watch the film. It's up on my website. Go up to our store on GaryKnoll.com and see an actual film. Beautiful valley, the Great Great Valley down in Texas that has the aloe grown there. where the irrigation comes from the water right out of the skies, and you'll see it's hand-planted and hand-harvested, and then the aloe, the whole-leaf aloe, goes into a factory right there on the premises, and it's washed, then it's crushed, the whole leaf. Why the whole leaf? Because everyone else strips off the aloe leaf. I found that a lot of the healing nutrients are in the leaf, so I want to capture those. But I don't want that bitterness. I don't want that that can cause upset stomachs, so we filter that out. Then it sits in quarantine, and I don't know anyone else that does this, because I want to make sure that there's no toxic bacteria. And then after that, then it is processed where we hand add herbs, and we add, for example, Siberian ginseng and gota kola, one of the most commonly used herbs in the world, especially good for women, and wild yam and ginger and peppermint extracts. And then we blend in the cherry and the black cherry natural fruit flavors, test it again for purity and potency, and it's got to have at least 10,000 mucopolysaccharides per serving. All this is done under strict rabbinical supervision, and you see the rabbi there watching every single process that goes on. And then after all of this is done, the delicious, highly nutritious, whole leaf, organic aloe done right there in the United States in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, then it gets the seal of approval from the Aloe International Research Council. So it's a big bottle, 33.8 fluid ounces. And so that's my heavenly aloe. And I believe, I'm not going to tell you what aloe does. That would be making a claim, and I can't do that. But that doesn't prevent you from going on Google and looking under aloe vera and looking at all the things it does. And this is not just any aloe. This is the aloe of all the varieties of aloe. In my opinion, and the opinion of many, the highest quality is the Barbadandius, and Barbadensis leaf. And it's the whole leaf, not just the gel. And it is Circle K kosher, and it does have the gota kola. Look under gota kola, G-O-T-U-K-O-L-A root, and look under wild yam root and ginger root and peppermint leaf. All those are added with a delicious cherry and black cherry natural fruit flavors. So that's it. That's your special. Holy aloe. Heavenly aloe, we call it. Heavenly aloe. I believe people should take a minimum of 1 tablespoon per day. I do a little more than that, but I put it in my drink in the morning, along with that Supremacy. And you get a great special on the Holy Fallow today. You buy one, and you get one free. All right? So buy one and get one free. So it's a great, great special. Holy Fallow, Heavenly Aloe, that's what it is, or Supremacy. Call for these specials, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or drop into our vitamin closets, and you can pick them up in person. So call now and get either or both of these wonderful specials at a great discount. Buy one, get one free. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or visit our vitamin closets, where you see all the latest books and videos, over 100 different videos to select from, and many different books, at 83rd and Broadway, open 7 days a week from noon till 6, or 307 East 92nd Street, open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, noon to 6. Now, let's go back to our program. And for those of you who felt that Dr. Andrew Wakefield was not given a fair and objective hearing, in fact, many believe that he was the victim of medical McCarthyism, a modern-day witch hunt. This is a man who, completely independent of anyone, did his own investigation into Dr. Wakefield and the whole vaccines, the MMR vaccine, causing problems in the kids who received it. J.B. Handley, please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall. Continuing our discussion on the the condition of the American media in attacking, mercilessly attacking, Dr. Andrew Wakefield and his colleagues, making statements against them, but without really taking the time and scholarship to verify that the original complaint that he had fraudulently manipulated the results of a review of 12 persons in England that had gastrointestinal disturbances after taking the MMR vaccine. At no point did Wakefield actually state that there was a connection between the MMR vaccine and autism. That was made out of clear cloth, and that should have been a red flag. But everyone in the American media has been taken in by Brian Deere, the accuser. Now, seeing the quackbusters in America lie constantly and having no qualifications in what they're talking about, but only in courts have they been discredited completely, but the American media still supports them, and yet they have nothing legitimate in their background. But they have enormous power. They're affiliated with a lot of the pharmaceutical interests. They're completely aligned. The question then is, how could you attack and destroy a man's reputation, call him a fraud, call him a liar, call him everything, and not present independent research to prove your point? And what about some sense of fairness? Shouldn't you also invite the person to defend themselves without first condemning them? That has not been the case. And I especially ask you to look at any of the statements by Anderson Cooper on CNN as the example of what I consider the worst possible type of journalism. This is McCarthyism, McCarthy journalism at its worst. This is yellow journalism. So to give us a different perspective, we have invited J.B. Handley, along with his wife, founded Generation Rescue, and today they are doing some independent research on this. Nice to have you with us today, J.B.
Gary, thanks for having me.
J.B., let's go through the accusations. The most current accusations are that Wakefield was trying to get rich with $42 or $43 million in some scheme to make some drug that would impact on autism, and therefore he had to scare people into believing that there was this happening. So I got to ask, let's go through this first and determine who is his accuser. What have you been able to find out about Brian Deere and his statements on the record, not third person, not hearsay? Let's keep it that if we can't prove the statement against Deere, we don't make the statement against Deere, because we will not fall in the same trap that Anderson Cooper and the rest of these people call themselves journalists. So let's go through what we can actually prove about Deere and his statements, and then measure that against the facts so we can get a different or more honest perspective. The
Absolutely.
Form is yours. Go ahead.
The first thing we know about Brian Deere is that he's an independent journalist. He often characterizes himself as a Sunday Times journalist, which adds a certain amount of pedigree to what he's saying. But we have an explicit quote from the Sunday Times that we put on the Age of Autism blog that disowns any affiliation with Brian Deere. So the first thing we know is that he's an independent journalist for hire.
Okay, do you have that to quote?
I can pull it up while I'm talking to you. So yeah, I'll get it for you in just a second here.
Okay, because as we go, anything you have the challenge is what he has done, I'd like to hear it.
Yes, CNN routinely refers to him as a Sunday Times journalist, and he routinely confirms that he is. And yet, here's a quote from the Sunday Times legal office. It's quite clear that you don't understand English. Brian Deere is not a member of the Sunday Times staff. He's a freelance journalist who runs his own website and blog. It is not under the control or direction of the Sunday Times. Mr. Deere should not represent himself as a Sunday Times journalist. He's not a member of the staff, does not have a regular salary from us, is not in our pension scheme, and pays his own taxes as a freelance. So there you go. It can't be much more clear than that. That's Alistair Brett, legal manager, Sunday
Times. Okay, well, then that makes a lot of difference, because suddenly that recasts his so-called authority as a Sunday Times reporter, as Neville Hutchinson was, science editor. So, you know, when you're writing for the Sunday Times, there's an assumption that it has even more respect than the New York Times. So right now,
no doubt,
they all should recheck at the door, allowing this man to say something based upon his affiliation with this paper.
Yeah. The next thing that we can't understand, you know, Andy Wakefield went through 160 days of a hearing at the General Medical Council, and Brian Deere attended every single day of that hearing. A journalist named Jane Bryant asked him explicitly who was paying for all his times here. He said back to her the Sunday Times and Channel 4, and we got confirmation from the Sunday Times and Channel 4 that they were not paying for his attendance. He then asked more explicitly and wouldn't give an answer. So the truth is we don't know who's sustaining this guy, who's had very little in the way of published articles since about 2003. What we do know is that when Brian Deere first took up his investigation of Andy Wakefield, he was assisted by a group called Medico-Legal Investigations, who's supported by the British Pharmaceutical Council, who explicitly stated that they supported Brian Deere in his investigation. In fact, they used to crow about it on their website, but they took it down. So we know that for certain, that he was at least assisted by a group that's backed by the British pharmaceutical industry. So that's for sure. We also know that the former editor of the Sunday Times, who hired Brian Deere, had a father who sat on a health council in Britain that had to go through a very embarrassing removal of an MMR vaccine in the late 80s from the market. So does that mean that that editor went after Andy Wakefield to protect the reputation of his dad? Impossible to know, but just another potential piece of the puzzle. I want to get to something else, though, Gary, that you mentioned earlier that I think is way more important and way more incriminating. It's something that I can really talk about in terms of fact. The accusation that Brian Deere is making against Andy Wakefield is actually very confusing for the general public, but simple to understand. When you're in Britain, you go to a general practitioner doctor, and they keep a file on your child. Parents of children with autism, like myself, all have horror stories of dealing with local doctors who didn't understand the complexity of the condition going on with our children. So typically, we're referred on and referred on and referred on until we find somebody who actually understands what's going on with our kid. In Britain, the Royal Free Hospital, where Andy Wakefield worked, is one of those places. It's sort of Mayo Clinic-like in terms of having experts in many different fields. And parents of children with autism who are suffering from extreme bowel disease, immune systems upside down, et cetera, would routinely get referred to the Royal Free Hospital. But in Britain, those records from your general practitioner don't travel with you to the major hospital. It's the job of the Royal Free to start from scratch and make an entire separate diagnosis of what's going on with the child. Brian Deere's entire accusation of Andy Wakefield is that the general practitioner records that he has access to and the Royal Free records don't match. And because they don't match, that's fraud. Now, that would be like having some unique condition that your doctor can't figure out, but he keeps a bunch of notes on. Then you go to Mayo and they get the condition properly diagnosed. There's a difference between your local doctor and the Mayo, and then you accuse someone of fraud. That's how absurd what's being done here really is. And I think the most important data set, and the data set that I've spent all my time, is the parents of the children. The parents of the children are available in Britain for interviews. I personally introduced a parent of two of the kids in the study and one other parent of one of the children in the study to CNN after the yellow journalism by Anderson Cooper. I completely agree with your characterization. One of the parents was on her way to a studio to be interviewed, at least on the Parker Spitzer show, and they pulled the interview. I know for certain that 11 of the 12 parents, because I can't comment on the 12 because I've never been able to find them, would support Andy. And they would say that the gap between their GP and the Royal Free are subtle gaps, that they were treated with great respect, and that the representations made of their children in Andy's original study 98 are completely accurate. So that's the big thing here, is that you have a nuance that Brian Deere has captured and decided to call fraud. The Royal Free doctors literally had zero access to the original records from these patients, and you have the parents all on Andy's side saying, no, the study is absolutely representative of my kid and accurate to what happened to them. That, I think, is the great crime here, is how easy it would be for an honest journalist to go talk to the parents in Britain and see how their story differs from what's being told. None of these parents were ever allowed to speak at the GMC hearing, which was the trigger for Andy losing his license in the first place.
Well, to me, that's a kangaroo court. And by the way, on Thursday this week, we'll be showing that this is not unusual in England, that there are multiple cases where something that went against the Crown, went against the British government, was then hidden, lied about, or covered up. including one I won't even get into, the IRA, where several of the Irish spent years in jail when the government knew that they were innocent, later were freed, but long after they should have been. Not one of the people who did engage in the cover-up were held accountable. In fact, no one has ever been held accountable for any of the cover-ups. And I think that's important. Also, the lies, out-and-out lies. If you say that Andrew Wakefield said that the MMR vaccine was causing autism, that's a lie, because he never said that. That wasn't in his writings. That wasn't in his statements. Yet that's what's being promoted all over the media. This man said there's an association between the MMR vaccines and autism. Have you found that association?
What I think is funny is, I actually think it's comical, there has been this revision of history to make it sound like Andy's 98 paper triggered a vaccine panic around the world. As an American parent, I can tell you that I hadn't even heard of Andy Wakefield until probably 2005. His paper had absolutely nothing to do with my fears about vaccines and autism. When I began vaccinating my son in 2002, I'd only heard the first whisper, and it was sort of a hippie whisper that there might be something here, but I didn't give it much thought. It wasn't until about midway through 2003, when my son went upside down after a vaccine appointment, that I started to take this stuff more seriously, as you can imagine. And so this idea that Andy's paper, which to your point never even mentioned that they'd found an association between MMR and autism, was somehow a trigger point for a worldwide panic is absurd. They're trying to put the genie back in the bottle. The real panic, if you will, the real publicity around this issue has only been in the last 3 or 4 years when people like Jenny McCarthy started talking in a much louder way. And they're trying to revise history to make this seem like it was all Andy's fault. So if he's a fraud, the whole thing's a fraud. Can we please all move on? And it's just not going to work. The reason it's not going to work is that these kinds of things don't resonate unless the population shares the point of view. And you can't walk through any neighborhood in America without finding a parent whose kid went upside down after a vaccine appointment. So it resonates. When I walk through the halls of my elementary school, I'm not a pariah. I'm a guy who people want to understand, hey, what happened to your kid? How can I avoid that? I heard some others it happened to them too. What do I do to get around this? That's the reality of what's going on in America. And the media's mischaracterization of history is not going to do anything to change that.
Well, but it's not. The media does not create history. The media reports on what it's told to report, and that's frequently biased. So first they lied about Andrew Wakefield making a statement that autism was associated. He did not. I read the paper very clearly. Also, Andrew Wakefield was pro-vaccine, so therefore he was not an anti-vaccine advocate. So then it ends up that all he found was that there was some correlation in the patients with gastrointestinal problems that may have come from the MMR. Well, the parents already have attested to that. Prior to Andrew Wakefield, they saw that there were problems. And Brian Deere, on his way into one of those hearings, was shown a photograph, a large photograph, one you could not mistake what was in the photograph. It was, I'm going to guess, a 3-foot by 3-foot photograph of one of the children from one of the parents. And he has a colostomy bag where his entire colon was removed because of the severe inflammatory response inside this. And yet Deere is looking right at the woman in the photograph and denying that this was a gastrointestinal problem. And the woman is saying, do you think they take out healthy colons? Do you think they give a kid a colostomy bag that they has to wear for the rest of his life for no reason? And that was such an important point when I saw that. So discuss that, but also then I want you to get into the affiliation, and here's where it gets for me as a journalist, and a real journalist, not the Anderson Cooper journalist, where no one can find a story. I've done so on over 300 occasions. Boy, were there red flags all over Brian Deere's affiliation or association or alignment with the pharmaceutical industry on vaccines. Take us to those associations now, all right?
Yeah, I will. And let me just talk one quick thing, and then I'll jump to the associations. I know the parent who showed Brian Deere the photo, who has that child, who has a colostomy bag. I think you could go on and on about what a difficult character Brian Deere is, but that would all be sort of ad hominem, right? The real question is, is he saying things that are true or not? And I'll just go back to it. The parents all say he's not. they were perfectly willing to get on CNN with Brian Deere. In fact, they were begging to have Deere in the room for these interviews, and yet CNN deferred and chose not to. And I just think that's criminal if you're trying to get to the bottom of the story. If all the parents agree with Andy, if they all say that the way their kids were characterized in the study was accurate, who are you supposed to believe? But if you never have access to that information, only one side comes out. You know, what's interesting about Deere is that when you go back into his history, we know that medico-legal investigations helped advise him and that they're supported by the British pharmaceutical industry. One other thing we know, and a name that nobody in the U.S. would know, is a guy named Dr. Evan Harris, who was a member of Parliament. He was a doctor, much as Bill Frist was a doctor, but he was also a member of Parliament, much like an American congressman. He was helping Deere from day one. He was visiting the Lancet. He's been on the record extremely supportive of the vaccine program. He was a Glaxo Welcome Fellow. Glaxo Welcome, of course, is a vaccine maker.
They make the vaccines.
They make the vaccine. And his father, Evan Harris's dad, sat on the Committee on the Safety in Medicines from 1990 to 1992 during a period when they had to withdraw an MMR vaccine that was damaging kids that was very, very embarrassing. So this guy latched onto Deere from the get-go. He was a very powerful congressman. He was clearly supported by the pharmaceutical industry because he was a Glaxo Welcome Fellow. He'd also been an active member of the British Medical Association, who owns the British Medical Journal. So we're starting to see some ties in here that are very, very clear. The next one is Lancet. Lancet is the publication that in 98 put out Andy Wakefield's paper. Well, in 2004, the CEO of the Lancet joined GlaxoSmithKline's board, which was right around the time the Lancet threw Andy Wakefield under the bus and let his study kind of blow in the wind during the GMC hearing. So Dr. Sir Crispin Davis, who's the chief executive of Reed Elsevier, which is the owner of the Lancet, joined the board of GlaxoSmithKline in the summer of 2003, right before the Sunday Times article came out. So there you go. There's another interesting angle. And then the Sunday Times editor who hired Deere is a guy named Paul Newke, and he's the son of Professor George Newke, who was on the Committee on the Safety of Medicines when both the MMR and Plusvax vaccines were introduced. So you have Deere surrounded by an editor whose dad was on the board of something, a congressman who's a doctor, I say congressman to use the American equivalent, yeah, exactly, who was a doctor. You have medico-legal investigations. It starts to look to me, and this is more conjecture, that Brian Deere is really a journalist for hire stooge with a lot of powerful people behind him.
At the very least, based upon the prima facie evidence, Brian Deere should not have his word and the only person to attack this group as the definitive word. And also, he has not been transparent. He has not turned over his banking records. He has not turned over his income each year for the last 10 years to show where was he making his money. At any time, was he given any consulting fees from any of the front groups for the vaccine company? Because vaccine groups don't give you money directly. They give their money to foundations that they control. The foundations give it to research groups that are front groups that then hire people who are going to bid their will. So we have not seen this kind of work. If Brian Deere were that concerned, let him come forward with all his bank statements. Let us see where he made his money. Right now, based upon what I know about Brian Deere, I would consider him extremely biased. I would not take anything he said without challenge. And at no point can we show that Andrew Wakefield or any of the other scientists who were looking at the irritable bowel condition benefited in any way. To the contrary, they all lost tremendously. Wakefield lost his license to practice medicine. He has been hammered in his reputation. And yet, in America, we tend to jump on. We don't tend to look. We take sides immediately. And there's only one side when it comes to vaccines. All American journalists jump on the pro-vaccine bandwagon. It's a disgrace how completely aligned American media is with a pharmaceutical company until you look at 90% of the ads on television on certain shows, and they're all pro-pharma, with a side effect frequently being death. And you hear them say, if you're taking Celebrex, one of the things, side effects is death, and one of the sleeping aids, death, and one of the anti-inflammatories, death. And yet they're making billions of dollars. So instead of looking at this honestly and objectively and looking for the truth, they start off with a lie, and now they got to cover their own asses. They have to protect their own reputations, and that is wrong. Now, in 2 days from now, I will be doing a special with the parents. These 12 parents, or as many as we can, will be on, plus some physicians from England who independently saw this, and I'm going to hold a report from Harvard. Harvard researchers confirmed the GI inflammation link, and this is in volume 20, number 1 of Autism Research Review International in Biomedical Update. Quote, Harvard physician recently reported that biopsies performed by him revealed the presence of chronic inflammation of the gastrointestinal tract, as well as the presence of nodular hyperplasia in 15 of 89 autistic children. The findings parallel those of Andrew Weil, the researcher who first identified the presence of a unique type of gastrointestinal disorder in children with autism spectrum disorder. The scientist told a conference, quote, these children are ill, in distress and pain, and not just mentally, neurologically dysfunctional. So there's another scientist now from Harvard confirming what Andrew Weil's group did. Are they going to attack him now? Are they going to attack this Harvard researcher? Are they going to smear him? And then also, how about the professor, Richard Death, professor of immunology, who also came up with the idea that these kids did have inflammation because of the MMR vaccine, even if the MMR had no mercury or aluminum, they had the viruses themselves which caused inflammation. So now we have two professors in specializations, one from Northwestern University, the other from Harvard, confirming Andrew Weil's work.
Now yeah, and Gary, just to clarify, Richard Dietz is from Northeastern, not Northwestern yet.
Yeah.
But just to let's talk about that for a second. You know, on the one hand, I'm very grateful for the work that Andy Wakefield has done. He has documented clearly that children with autism are suffering from severe gastrointestinal distress. On the other hand, telling that to a parent with autism is like trying to explain to them that kids with autism have trouble talking or socializing. We all knew that, and we've known that for a long time. The much larger question, and the question that's not getting asked properly, is whether or not it is, in fact, vaccines that are driving all this autism. And what's extremely frustrating, coming from a person like me who has read literally every document written on this topic, every piece of science published, is how little work has actually been done and how easy it would be to do this. Let me just give you a quick example. There's a 2003 pediatric study that is often cited as proof that vaccines don't cause autism. The only thing the study did was look at vaccinated children who got a bunch of mercury in their shots and compare them to vaccinated children who got a little less mercury in their shots. And the conclusion of the study was that they could neither prove nor deny the hypothesis. Now, as absurd as that sounds, that's actually the number one most cited study proving vaccines don't cause autism. The science actually done to date, despite wild misrepresentations from the other side, doesn't really exist. And it would be very easy to do. There's two things you could do. The first thing you could do is take a group of children who'd been fully vaccinated and compare them to a group of children who'd received zero vaccines. We know that's about 3% of the U.S. population, whether it's for religious, philosophical, whatever the reason might be. Those children are already out there. All you need to do is go find out what their autism rate is. If it's 1 in 100 amongst unvaccinated kids, I'd say that's a condemning data set for thinking vaccines are causing autism. The other thing you could do is an animal model. Take a group of primates who are the closest biologically humans and vaccinate them. Take another group of primates and don't, and then see if there's a difference in health outcomes. Well, the bad news for the other side, the bad guys who continue to assert that all vaccines are fine and this isn't harming our children, is that work like this is finally getting done. The State University of New York at Stony Brook looked at a group of kids who got the full series of Hep B vaccine and compared them to a group of kids who didn't get any Hep B vaccine. Finally, somebody looking at a control group who didn't get vaccines, and they found a dramatically higher rate of autism in the Hep B group. A group at the University of Pittsburgh is doing a study right now vaccinating one group of primates and not vaccinating another. They've published two of the five or six studies they're going to do on this, and the first two are exceptionally damning in terms terms of the health outcome of the vaccinated group of primates. So we're finally starting to see the real and honest science. And I am telling you, Gary, it ain't looking good for the other side. That's why we're spending all this time on silly conjecture, historical revisionism, and miscasting with Andy Wakefield to try to distract from the real science that's starting to get done, well, that's relatively straightforward to do, and that could finally put this issue to bed.
J.B. Hanley, we're out of time. Thank you and your foundation, Generation Rescue, for the work that you're doing to inform the public. My audience knows that when you have millions of Americans who have seen what has happened with their children after a vaccine episode and almost universally denied any legitimacy, denied help, denied the knowledge that the vaccine did this, now we have a tsunami of parents who are refusing just to accept the official position any longer, irrespective of what the Anderson Coopers or Dr. Gupta or others would like us to believe. The truth will win out, and when it does, we will see that the Andrew Wakefields and others will be exonerated. Thank you very much for your work.
Thanks, Gary.
Destination reed. I'm an ever spinning top, whirling around till I drop. Oh, but what am I to do? My mind is.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.
You got me going in circles.